Welcome, all of you wine and true crime lovers. I'm Brandy.
And I'm Chris.
And this is Texas Wine and True Crime. Thank you for being here, friends, for this week's episode, The Death of Betty Williams. Tonight, we are sipping on Aglianico Rosé by our friends at Silver Spur Winery. We'll tell you all about this wine and what Chris has paired with it during our wine recess. Honey, we just had a great live show at Henry's Majestic.
We had a fantastic live show at Henry's Majestic.
Everybody came out. It was so fun. It's our first one. That was February the 1st. So we're going to be there again, March 7th, first Thursday of every month. So local Dallasites, come see us at Henry's Majestic.
It's free.
It's free.
Just stroll on in.
They have great food.
Great food, great drinks, great atmosphere.
Yes.
All around.
Such a cool place. Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, great vibe.
Henry's Majestic, first Thursday of every month. Chris, after tonight, the rest of the month, we are going to be doing a Texas Wine Club Spicy Month.
Spicy month.
Spicy. So the wines we're going to have from Texas Wine Club are going to be paired with some dishes that you're going to make in the month of February. So, friends, I will post.
I'm about to rethink all the dishes I was going to make.
Yes.
We've already had this talk, exciting. I think, already.
Yeah, we have. But our friends out there, so Chris, people have said, I wish I could get some of the wine you guys are going to have for the month. So I thought, okay, cool. Well, now I've got this little package and I have a link where our friends can order this spicy month wine. So I will post that on our socials. So if you want to grab some wine that we are going to be sipping and talking about, please do from our friends at Texas Wine Club. The other thing is, Chris, we are going to be on Good Morning Texas, WFAA Channel 8, this Thursday, February 8th, from 9 to 10 a.m.
I know, it's going to be
really
cool.
Since it's Good Morning.
I'm really excited about that.
That's oh my gosh.
Such a cool opportunity.
We are so excited. We're going to be taking pictures, but this is the episode we're going to put out before that day. So you now have been warned to check us out. So like Chris says, set your VCRs.
Yeah, if you're at work, set your VCRs.
Yes.
And yeah, check it out when you get home.
Please. That's going to be very exciting.
I was kind of thinking too, like how on earth will we ever have any record of this?
We're going to have a clip. They're gonna have a clip. We're going to be able to watch it. Oh, yeah.
YouTube. Maybe be on YouTube. Ugh. Who knows?
Who knows? But Good Morning Texas, Channel 8, this coming up Thursday from 9 to 10. Very exciting. All right, honey. So we just covered this case at our live show, but we wanted to do that first before we put it out to the public. So here we are tonight going to talk about Betty Williams.
Yes, and actually a good quality recording.
Yes. It was okay. You tried. Chris got some new mics, you know, a little wireless fanciness going on, and they were amazing, but good old mics, you know.
Yeah.
Sounded better.
Had to.
We did a little switcheroo in the middle of the show.
Had to call an audible and switch in the middle. That's why you always bring backup.
Bring backup. All right, honey. Are
then
you
good,
so. Ready to talk about Betty Williams again?
Absolutely. Yes, Chimney.
Okay, friends. It's time to sip some wine and talk some crime. As always, we want to give you a few facts about where our crime takes place, so let's learn a little bit about Odessa, Texas. Odessa is home to a Stonehenge replica that has a similar size to Stonehenge in England, and the replica is equal in vertical height to the original. Now, I said this at the live show. I had no idea there was a Stonehenge replica in Odessa, Texas that looks exactly like the one in England.
I had no idea either.
It is so cool.
A lot
cool.
of flat land out there, though, to build it upon.
Yes. And I looked at it. I looked at pictures. It looks just like it. So if you've seen this in Odessa, let us know. Because I haven't seen the one in England, and I've always wanted to go. So Odessa is a lot closer.
Yeah, we considered it. It was kind of it was a bit of a trip.
Yeah, yeah. So let us know if you've been there. Number two, the curse of the Odessa Meteor Crater. The Odessa Meteor Crater is the site of a captivating local legend surrounding a purported curse associated with the impact site. So, Chris, according to folklore, individuals who disturb the area or remove rocks from the crater are said to be plagued by misfortune. This belief has contributed to the preservation of the crater and its surroundings, as locals caution against tempting fate by interfering with the site. I said also at the live show, I had no idea this even existed.
Me as well. And I'm kind of glad I didn't just stumble upon it.
Yeah. And still
a rock. And have misfortune, you know. We'll avoid that when we go to Stonehenge.
That's yes, sure. And I saw it. I looked at pictures, and it's definitely blocked off, and it looks like there's just a hole in the ground. It's very interesting. So if you have been to the meteor site, let us know. Number three, Christopher Scott Kyle, who was that U.S. Navy SEAL sniper, he was actually from Odessa. So he was famous for – he was a professional sniper, right, trained sniper in the Iraq War. He got several commendations for acts of heroism. He actually wrote a book about the war, right, and his experiences. It actually sold millions of copies. But Chris, he was murdered by Eddie Ray Ruth at the Rough Creek Lodge shooting range. So him and another Marine had taken this Eddie person who probably was suffering with a little PTSD, right? And they're helping each other. And he ends up shooting Christopher Kyle in the shooting range, at the shooting range. So I remember when this happened.
Very sad event.
Yeah, it was so sad, and he had done so much, and then this happens. So I didn't know he was from Odessa, but he was. On March 22nd, 1961, Betty Williams, a teenager at the time, was murdered by her ex-boyfriend, John Mack Herring. Chris, case open and shut. Not so fast. Details were unfolding that some couldn't wrap their heads around. What happened the night Betty Williams died? Okay, honey, we're going to go way back. So this case made national headlines because of the bizarre details that started to emerge in this case. In the 62 years since this crime has taken place, the town of Odessa has heard rumors about what happened to 17-year-old Betty, who was in her senior year of high school. Chris, she was very active in the school theater. So because she was active in the theater, rumors had it that she had, you know, hanged herself in the auditorium, right, above the stage. There was also rumor that she had fallen off the ladder at school. Another is that she was shot on stage while performing by a scorned lover, right? So it's interesting. You hear all of these sort of tales because this was a big case. In fact, there were a couple of people that reached out and said they had not only just grown up in this area, but they had lived in Kermit, where this trial will actually take place. But there was, for these 60 years, there was always rumors about what happened to Betty. So let's go ahead and talk about what was going on in Betty Williams' life at the time. So she grew up in Odessa with her parents. Now, they were devout Baptists, and they came down pretty hard on Betty for just, you know, trying to keep her out of trouble, away from boys, influential music.
Elvis Presley.
Yeah, this reminded me a lot of Footloose. You know, she has these desires, right, as a 17-year-old girl. And, you know, and when you have a strict father or mother who won't let you sort of express yourself, sometimes there's a little bit of rebellion that goes with that.
This reminds me nothing of Footloose, but I get your...
Do you know what I mean, though? But just like the music, right? They were Baptists. They didn't want her listening to that music in Footloose. Oh, yeah. You remember that?
I'm sure there was lots of areas of Texas in 1960.
Yes.
One or two that were experiencing the same things.
So. That's true. Okay. So she's got some overbearing parents a little bit. She keeps a diary with all of her secrets. Chris, her dad will eventually find this diary, and we'll talk about that here shortly. She was known by her classmates as an attention seeker. That's how one person described her. Someone else described her as sleeping with multiple boys, which is interesting, right? Like you have a father and a mother who are trying to stop you from doing this. But yet maybe for Betty, this is her way to feel popular or feel liked and loved. And I think it's just kind of to satisfy getting the attention, maybe. This is a 17-year-old girl. Her passion was the theater, which by her senior year, this is where I think, you know, again, I'm going to kind of talk about, I think Betty was probably suffering from some stuff. Mental illness was not really talked about at this time, nor really diagnosed like it is today. So
yeah,
I think
it was more or less shunned. You didn't really discuss those things.
No, you did not discuss those things. And so I think she was just maybe dealing with a little bit of growing up and a little bit of, you know, not having a really close circle of friends. So by her senior year, she wasn't allowed to perform in the theater anymore. In fact, the theater teacher, I guess, just thought she wasn't good enough to be in the plays. So they put her on props, like backstage stuff. So this was kind of a turning point for her, people would say. She, again, kind of felt out, left out.
Due to her skills or her popularity or...
I think maybe her skills, right? They're going into senior. You know how some of these schools are, right? With competition and getting the parts of things. And maybe they thought she just wasn't good enough. I mean, they put her on props and backstage to help the performers and not be the performer, right? So she started sneaking out. People would say she would come dressed one way and then change her clothes. She would like to wear all black and maybe leaving her house that wasn't appropriate. So she would carry a bag of clothes, and then wherever she would go, she would change those clothes.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of odd for the time. It's very, very beatnik.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Yeah. She was a little different.
For that part of Texas.
Yes, that is true.
Not reached that far out there, but you know.
Well, sadly, Chris, she was also doing other things to try to get attention. And this is what, you know, they always say, you know, how many times are you going to cry wolf until someone ignores you and doesn't come for you? And I feel like this happens to her. She starts telling people she doesn't want to live. She starts telling people that she would rather see heaven than be in Odessa. Right. That she would and not only like people she's close to confide in. She starts to tell a lot of people this and people just kind of ignore her and think, oh, she's just trying to get attention. And maybe she was at the time. I don't know. But she is sharing that she no longer wants to live. And she's sharing this verbally with several classmates and even some of her family, which we'll talk about. So, I mean, you know, there's a little bit of. People just don't go around saying those things. So I think we're dealing with a little mental instability at this time with Betty. Okay, so I realized after some of this research, Chris, that, you know, she didn't really have any close friends. We're talking 1961, you know, like I said, probably dealing with some sort of mental illness. It's easily overlooked at this time. But then something happens to Betty. Something exciting and good. She actually catches the eye of popular football player at Odessa High School. And his name was Mack Herring. And what a name, right? Like, I thought, oh, Mack Herring.
If you play football in Odessa, you're probably pretty famous. So football's
that is very true. Yes. I'm sure it's still huge there, right? Mack Herring is his name. They start dating in spring of 1960, but this relationship does not last very long, but they remain cordial. Mack moves on, starts seeing another girl, right? People aren't even sure how they got together, right? So they date, they probably go out a couple of times. He definitely did not take this relationship as seriously as she did. She would tell people she loved this guy and her life is over because Mack Herring has broken up with her. And I feel, again, it's like that insecurity that she probably was dealing with. And then she attaches to somebody like him and then her heart gets broken, right? And it's like, oh, now here's another thing to add to my list of why I want to go to heaven. So I don't think this helped Betty because she was already sharing this kind of thing with people.
Don't you not go to heaven if you kill yourself?
This is not the show. Are you just asking me that because I'm a Catholic?
Wow. They're even more religious. They're Baptist, right? They're a little more rigid than you, so.
All right. So another episode, another time. Okay. All right. So they end up breaking up. She would write him letters. She would tell her classmates, I don't want to live without him. And this just kind of kept going on, and people would feel sorry for her. But then they thought, oh, she just wants attention. And this, I think, is when we see the behavior and the thoughts escalating into something more dangerous for Betty's own self. She would go on to tell fellow classmates again about heaven. She would also tell them, Chris, she's sad. She would use the word depressed. And not even were her parents were really able to help. So I think Betty just was feeling really unloved. She couldn't go to her parents, you know, about this, about a boy that just broke her heart. And I don't know. I kind of think if only maybe one person would have taken her seriously and not brushed her off as attention-seeking, then maybe things would have turned out a little bit differently. And we talk about that now, right?
Right, too.
Somebody says something like that, you should take them a little seriously. So she told her cousin. So she tells a cousin that she wanted to die if she could not be with Mac Herring, okay? Now, her cousin at the time was also a high school student. And, you know, they were just saying her mood was turning a little bit darker. She seemed a little bit distraught. She had, remember I said her father had found her diary? So she confided in a friend about that. And Chris, in there, detailed her experiences with boys. And she had pleaded with her father, you know, like, I'll change and I'll be better. But her family says, and her cousin says that the situation at home was not good. Her parents were really putting pressure down on her and limiting her accessibility to other friends. And we know how sensitive of an age that is. It is a very sensitive age. You're growing into a young adult. She basically probably felt like she had no freedoms. And it makes me think of Jodi Arias we talked about, right? The ultimate freedom to her is death. And maybe Betty was dealing with some of this stuff. But again, you know, nobody really came forward and said or did anything for her. All right, by the winter, Betty had started telling friends that she would be better off dead. On March 22nd, 1961, Betty Williams is reported missing by her parents. She didn't come home after being out with Mac Herring. So Mac tells his parents he was with Betty and then dropped her off at home after their visit together. So the two are not back together, and I do want to say that. They aren't back together, but I said they remained cordial and they remained friends. Now, police go to Mac and his parents and say, listen, we know you were the last one with her. And he's adamant. I was out with her, yes. I dropped them off. I dropped her off at her parents, and that was it. And so I don't know. You know, his dad would later say that he went to his son and he said, listen, Betty's parents need some answers. We have to let them know where she is. We know you were the last one with her. But he is standing by his story that he took her home. Okay, Chris, a few days later, Mac Herring is actually brought into the Odessa Police Department and questioned about the last night that he saw Betty. Okay. Now, at first, when he's in the police station, he sticks to his story. His father is there with him. And before he says anything else, he goes to his dad and he says, Dad, I killed Betty. But the reason he killed her is because she asked him to. Now, this was confusing for his father. And, you know, I mean, I remember reading, first of all, I read the newspaper articles that were happening right at this time about this case. His father was crushed. He thought, my son's life is over. I can't even believe this is happening. He couldn't even believe that his son would have done something like this.
And you'd have to think, what were his true feelings for her? Because that takes a very strong commitment to someone to be able to pull something like that off.
You are so right about that. Or does he do it because she won't stop bugging him to do it? Now, somebody asks you over and over and over and over and over, because this will come out, that Betty approached Max several times about doing this for her? Do you think he just got tired of it? I mean, was it because of his commitment to her, or was it because of his annoyance to get rid of her because she was the girl who would not go away? And, well, like, regrets of dating her. Like, I felt torn on both sides of it.
Well, it's 1961.
Okay.
It's probably a lot easier to avoid somebody in 1961 than it is today.
That is true. No so, phones.
Just
no
to
socials.
Kill somebody to get, like, because they're annoying you, like, you would have to really not like them too, I guess, which would make it a little more... not like he's doing her much of a favor. He's the one that actually... kind of
That's
wants
right.
to commit it to, so, or he in fact was really committed to her and wanted to give her her wish.
I don't know. Again, these two were very opposite. People even wondered what the attraction was for both of them, but there was an attraction, and maybe there was something about her that he really loved and found interesting. You know, I would say more interesting. She
or
was probably
you did
a lot
say
different.
She was. Maybe a little more loose than some of the girls in the school.
Well, we know that for sure. And I mean,
given that
Texas Monthly actually wrote an article about this case.
Well, I think.
And they did talk about the promiscuities and things that were going on. I didn't dive into that, but they did write an article about
this. So that could also be a reason that Mac liked her too, because, you know, I'm pretty sure a lot of families were just like hers as far as
sure.
being religious, you know, and very devout in their faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, premarital sex, probably pretty hard to get out there in Odessa. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You're hitching your wagon to somebody, maybe. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Just being real. I mean.
No, it's true. Yeah. Well, his father can't even believe that he's saying this. But all of a sudden, before he goes in to talk to police, he hands over a letter to his dad. And his dad's like, what is this? And he goes, it's a letter written by Betty Williams. And now it's time for a wine recess. Okay, honey, we are drinking a yummy, yummy Silver Spur Winery Rosé. First of all, I just want to compliment the color of this wine. It's beautiful.
Yes, very nice kind of peach.
I would say it's a peach. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Not in flavor.
No. No.
But just the color, yeah. Get some fresh peach juice.
It. This is a fantastic rosé. It's a 2022 rosé. I love rosés. I really like rosé in the summer. I can imagine drinking this all summer long. It's that smooth, that good, that refreshing. Silver Spur, our friends in Hyco, Texas, they have, they're just a little boutique winery, Chris, right down in downtown. We've had their one on our show before a few weeks ago. They have a wine club, plenty of benefits, no fee to join, no monthly fee, no long-term obligation. They are actually open. So Thursday through Sunday, you can go see our friends at this boutique, but they are right on South Pecan Street in Hyco, Texas. Silver Spur Vineyard and Winery. Friends, please go check them out. Tell them your friends at True Crime, Texas Wine and True Crime sent you. But Chris, tell us what you paired with this rosé.
So we had a little taste of it, and I had already planned on doing a vegetarian dish. I don't really know why, but we've been trying to eat a little healthier since it's a new year.
New year,
and
new
I
us.
Was making some stuffed peppers, red, yellow, and orange. I find them to be a little sweeter. And so that's kind of what made me think, we'll pair this wine with this particular dish. And so I made some mushroom stuffed peppers on top of a, what do you call them? Zoodles.
Oh, yes.
Zucchini noodles that I tossed with.
They're so good.
Just a little garlic and herb. And then I made a mushroom gravy to top everything off with. And so it was a very nice meal, very light dish, of course. But I did like the wine a lot with it. It had, you know, kind of a little strawberry-ish
yes.
overtones to it, dry, very crisp. But yeah, very nice wine, very nice meal.
Congratulations on the meal, by the way.
Yeah.
It was beautiful and it tasted wonderful.
Thank you. It was.
And I know we are trying to go more vegetarian. We like our meat. Don't get us wrong. But Chris, you just make some really good stuff. And your vegetarian dishes are still so good.
I think I had
some, I don't know, but it was gorgeous.
It was the end of the week. And
it was clever.
What do we have left?
I thought it was so clever. We took some pictures of it. We're going to post some pictures of it. Chris, it was clever. It was beautiful. It tasted great. If you like vegetarian dishes, send us an email. We'll give you that recipe since we're not putting them on Patreon anymore because it takes Chris 2 days to do one recipe. It's just so much. But we are happy to give you the recipe. So please email us. More than welcome. More than happy to share that.
A little call out there. Wow.
Well, no, because you work so hard and you want to be so detailed for people and we appreciate it. But it does take a long time. But we don't want to just cut that off to people. If you want a recipe and you hear, oh my gosh, I need, or if you see the picture and go, I need to have that on a dish in my house, message us. We're happy to share those deets with
people.
People
would rather watch us live on Patreon than read recipes.
Well, they're gonna see us live on maybe YouTube and Instagram. We're going that way. All right, honey. Thank you for the dish. Thank you, Silver Spur, for the wine. Let's get back into the case, shall we?
We shall.
Chris, this letter that is signed by Betty Williams, and I do want to say that this signature is confirmed to be Betty's. They did a handwriting analysis at that time back in 1961. The letter is dated March 20th, which is 2 days before her murder. Now, I found the actual contents of this letter in the newspaper from 1961. I'm going to read that to everyone right now. I want everyone to know that what I'm about to do in no way implicates anyone else. I say this to make sure that no blame falls on anyone other than myself. I'm waging a war within myself, a war to find the true me, and I fear that I am losing the battle. So rather than admit defeat, I'm going to beat a quick retreat into the no man's land of death. As I have only the will and not the fortitude necessary, a friend of mine has graciously consented to look after the details. His name is Mac Herring, and I pray that he will not have to suffer for what he is doing for my sake. I take upon myself all blame, for it lies on me alone. Signed, Betty Williams. What do you think about that letter?
Very well written.
Very well written. By the way, this girl was smart. She read a lot of books. She was an intelligent person, which maybe part of him liked too. But she's really thinking this out.
It's very dark as well.
It is very dark. That is the one thing also I was just... It's kind of a haunting. I was reading this and I'm like, gosh, like, I can't believe I'm finding this letter, first of all, after all these years in this newspaper. And you could really see what she was dealing with. Herring tells police, Chris, that he and Williams went to a hunting property. But like, his parents had a hunting property, right? And there was a stock tank that was near the property. He shot her in the head with a 12-gauge shotgun, and then he tied weights to her body and threw her into the stock tank. That is where they will find Betty Williams. So they do find her. He also told police, Chris, that Williams chose the weapon he used to kill her. Now, I was trying to find out where the gun came from. I don't know if I just missed it. I don't have it in my notes, but I was kind of thinking that after I was researching this case, I am kind of curious of where the gun came from. Well, his parents have a hunting property, right? This is Odessa.
It may have just been there, and that's what she chose.
I don't think it was her father's. I don't think, not that I'm aware of, that she took it from the home. But I don't know. It could have just been at his parents' property.
Who knows? People used to drive around with shotguns in the rear window of their pickup truck. So,
yeah. All right. Well, Herring is obviously arrested for this crime. So they put him under arrest. And then he actually goes to trial. He was tried for this murder in Kermit, Texas, but he was actually acquitted. So here's what's interesting. At our live show, I don't even think I shared this with you. A lady came up and told me she was 6 years old, born in Kermit, Texas, where this trial happened. And she remembers her mother talking about it. She goes, I was only six. And it's something, if you're from that area, you grew up hearing about this case. You grew up and you heard about Betty Williams. Just like I said, her spirit roams the halls. Like even to today, people will say that they see Betty Williams roaming the Odessa High School halls. So this is so interesting. Like it, she's in our audience in Dallas and she's like, yeah, I was from Kermit. She's actually a true crime author. So she had thought about writing a book about this, but then realized there was already a book out about this case. But she just remembers being a little girl and her mother. And then as growing up, she would hear more and more. So interesting. So basically they were trying to say he was insane at the time of the murder. Okay, so before he's, so insanity, please, we talk about that a lot. Not used as much today because you have psychiatrists you have to get through. I mean, they did back then too, but we saw this in the Candy Montgomery case, you know, like just level of insanity, right, for that time. And basically like, you know, if he would have never met Betty Williams, would he have committed this crime? And people thought no. So this is why the insanity plea works for him. He gets acquitted of this crime. And then there was like this big hearing and there was some legal challenge within the Texas Supreme Court. It went all the way to the top. But then they have a second trial in Beaumont, Texas, and he is resulted in an acquittal in that case too. So after this, he walks free. Now, the fascinating thing for me about this case and trial is I feel like sometimes, a lot of times, the victim gets lost in this, okay? Especially when we go to trial. And, you know, sometimes we'll see the victim put on trial and things start coming out. Well, people were in support of Mac Herring. You know, Betty Williams, they said, was a bad seed, right?
Like, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
People were behind him.
He may have been a little more well known in the town, and she was seen as the one wearing black and kind of the bad girl. Well, not bad girl, but maybe so because of the promiscuity. And so probably believe that she could have talked him in. I mean, it's quite clear she talked him into this. I still don't think he just
killed her.
Was a killer. Yeah.
There was two psychiatrists that took the stand and testified that Mac did not know right from wrong when he shot Betty Williams. I find that an interesting statement.
Well, that was probably just to get him up, you know, get him free. I'm quite sure he knew right from wrong.
But that's what's so interesting about this with the insanity plea, or, you know, the moment of a moment of insanity, not knowing right from wrong when you pulled the trigger. So questionable, but okay. But yeah. So they have two psychiatrists who get on and say Betty poisoned his mind, basically. And he only did this because she asked him to.
Women talk some men into doing some stupid stuff a time or two.
Hey. So. That's true.
Yeah.
Mac Herring was acquitted of any wrongdoing. And like I said, his social status did not change. People supported him. They felt sorry for him. They, you know, if he would have never met Betty, they felt like he would have never done something like this. The Odessa High students report ghost sightings and paranormal phenomena all the time, Chris, at this school. It's funny because I had a girl reach out to me over Facebook who actually went to Odessa High School, and she said they did a lock-in, or they did some sort of like overnight in the high school auditorium gym, and people would like jump out.
Like Young Life or something?
Yeah, jump out and pretend they're Betty Williams. And here's something I said at the live show, and what happens in the afterlife, right? We all believe in something, but do we all really know? No, right? Nobody really knows until they die. But Betty Williams, she wanted to be so loved and so liked and wanted, I feel like, just a friend, right? Someone she could go to and talk to. And And a part of her probably felt left out. And I think to myself, gosh, does she know how much she's still being talked about today? Like, does she have, would she have any idea what kind of that Odessa, that people in Odessa High School, even till today, think that she roams the halls and all of these stories that come around her name? And it's like they're keeping her, the spirit alive,
like
in
she's
this.
finally popular.
Yeah. Like she's, I mean, that's what I just find so fascinating about some stories like this, as sad as that is and what she was dealing with. But, you know, but look, we're talking, it's 2024, and I'm telling the Betty Williams story. And, I just find it kind of fascinating that she was living this life feeling this way. And then this was her, you know, did she know when she wrote that letter and what Mac Herring was going to go through and the kind of attention this case got? I'm not sure she did. I almost think that maybe she just would think her parents would be sad, but then there would be nothing else about her ever spoken about again. And that's why I just find this case so fascinating. All right, friends. Well, Chris, do you have anything else to add about Betty Williams?
I don't believe so.
No, this was, I had never heard of this case, by the way, when it was brought to my attention. And so thank you for the listener who shared this one with us. It's definitely, and by the way, I said like Texas Monthly, they wrote an article about it. There is a book about this case. So there is information in there if anybody ever wants to dive down the Betty Williams rabbit hole. But all right, friends. Well, that's it for us tonight. Chris, until next time, stay safe, have fun, and cheers to next time.
Cheers.